Fulton City County Council meeting of May 21st, 2019. First thing is to approve the agenda. Mr. Lawson.
Thank you, Mr. President. Good morning, members of council. I do have one recommended change to today's agenda. We can strike approval of minutes.
Can I motion to approve the agenda as amended?
So,
motion, Mr. Wilson, second, Mr. Burton. Any questions? We'll take the vote. Mr. Hudson.
Yes.
Mr. Riley.
Yes.
Mr. Wilson.
Yes.
Mr. Burton.
Yes.
Obvious, motion carried. Mr. Moore, correspondence?
I have none, Mr. President.
Any correspondence from council? Correspondence from council. Public comment, Mr. Guy? Thank you. Paul Rieger?
Good morning. Paul Rieger, 18171 Deer Forest Road, Georgetown. A few meetings ago, Mr. Lawson had brought up about the footer inspections for the zoning, for the setbacks. Last night, I tried to get basically during one hearing, was speaking about that being done where I thought it was done, and that's now procedure. If that's not going forward after that meeting, when will that take effect, and is it in effect where planning and zoning is going to do that when they send out to the inspectors? I thought it was almost an immediate procedure that was going to be done. Second thing last night, and this comes back, and I'm still baffled with legality for taking one. You have one special use, similar scenarios, one has to do this, one has to do that, but no consistency. You had a commercial kennel come in last night again on a little bit over an acre parcel. Now, every which way from the different hearings, I've been told all different things when you need setbacks and don't need setbacks for the kennel. One case on Route 5, the dog kennels need setbacks. Another person has 12 dogs in a house for a commercial kennel, don't need setbacks because they're in a house. Another, last night, there was ones with, I believe it was, with kennels and stuff outside and other places for the dogs to go. How can you have one hearing require a setback when and another property doesn't? And if it says for a commercial kennel you need 200-foot setbacks, it's real simple for them to do the setbacks. You're coming in first. How can you give a special use exception without meeting the setback variances? It's like doing a conditional use and say, here, we're giving you the conditional use, but unless nobody complains or says anything, put in as many parking cars as you want, put anything wherever you want, and do it. It should be done the same principle. There is no consistency, and it was an ignorance. But also, too, there was a comment that basically anybody complains, you got to come back anyway within 5 years, then we'll deal with that issue at a time. And you would think with as many commercial kennels and other special uses throughout the county that were done prior to 5 years, there should be some renewals coming up in the future, or should have been coming in. There should be, and there's no complaints, a simple fast track to have the director approval, if no complaints, to save them the $400 fee. So that takes care of that. Also last night, concerning with the pools again, you had a hearing with an in-ground pool. How can you conditional use, or not conditional use, certificate of use and approve a pool, but yet it's not meeting the barrier for around it? Because if you're putting a built-in pool in and you put a fence around it, wouldn't you think that the pool and the fence would have to be approved at the same time? Don't know whether it was, but last night during the hearing, it seemed like the pool was approved and the fence wasn't. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Dan Kramer?
My name is Dan Kramer. On these signs that are posted for zoning changes or whatever, they're yellow. They're only one-sided. I want to know why they're not double-sided. Because when they go out, it says it's supposed to be put on the property. Well, if you're going down the road, and unless somebody's really looking, you don't really see that sign until bam, right there it is. Where if it would be set this direction and both sides and it's on the property, everybody's going to see it. I've seen them everywhere but on the property. I've seen them in the right of ways and every place else. I think it's high time you change that and make it double-sided. Doesn't cost that much, actually. And furthermore, I think it's high time you guys have a dash cam on these cars. When they go out and place them signs, that dash cam is going to show that they put it. Because the next time someone tells me a sign wasn't there when I knew for a fact it was there, I'm going to prove it to you because I got a dash cam. When I go past the place, it'll pick it up. So don't tell me I don't know what's there and what's not there, because it's very clearly wasn't there. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Jim Martin.
Thank you so much for your service to the public as elected officials. I know that you all care about your neighbors and about the topics we are bringing up about the need for housing in our community, especially for the working poor. And I hope we can all follow the study recommendations that Lisa will have for us. And I also met Dave. They're going to bring, their ideas might bring a lot of relief to the thousands who are suffering. But of course, Lisa and her team, they actually have to conduct the study. And I'm hopeful that the public meeting tonight that's scheduled right here in this council room will be very well attended. And I'm hoping that we hear lots of good ideas from the public. We all know about the extreme need for zoning changes also because of how the costs for land and infrastructure keep rising while the employment wages stay pretty much the same. We also hope this council implements the recommendations of the study regarding higher densities. I respect the hundreds of different vantage points as we tackle this huge problem, and all of you have been seeking solutions for a long time before I decided to get involved. I only see myself as really just one voice of many. I have an update on the proposal for the county regarding the Sussex County Vehicular Safe Parking Lot program that we wanted to try to implement. Because the county owns the land, we came to you first, but it falls within the town limits of Georgetown. We did submit a pre-development request for a meeting, and there was a telephone call made to Michelle Williams, and it was recommended that because there's a 100-year lease on the 29 acres, that it's not a feasible property. So we have new information about that, but it was recommended that we go outside the town limits and look for a property maybe that's owned by a church, possibly. So we're looking into that, and we are searching for that now. In the meantime, though, of course, we're trying to figure out where the car dwellers would be allowed to sleep, because as you might know, it's actually against the law to sleep in your car. So thank you for your time, and I really look forward to tonight's meeting at 6.
Thank you, sir. DJ Hughes.
DJ Hughes, 16566 Sweetwater Drive, Milton, Delaware. IG said he missed me last time I was here, so I figured I'd come back. I saw that the Dell.dot CTP update was on the agenda this morning, so that's the main reason I'm here. If y'all have been following along in the Cape Gazette since the most recent Five Points Working group, there's been some dialogue about some things that were spoken about at the working group meeting with respect to one of the priorities is to reevaluate the crossovers on Route 1. Dell.dot has three projects there. One basically includes minus Conaway Road, New Road, Nassau Road, and Tulip Drive and Slipper Shell Way, and all the way down to about the area of Surf Bagel. Another one is the Cave Neck Road project, and then the third one is the Light at 16. Myself, for years, have been trying to get Dell.dot to reprioritize and do the unsignalized intersections first before they remove that signal. If you go back to as the Gazette editorial said, it referenced Nathan Hayward pulling that 16 project, and I was actually at the urging of Representative Kerry. And the same reasons it was pulled back then were due to the safety reasons for the intersections north and south of there. And those reasons are actually more persistent today than they were back then. For whatever reason, after it got pulled, it got put ahead of Cave Neck and Monas Conaway again. I actually started working at Delta 1999 before I left in 2003. They had plans back then for an interchange at Cave Neck Road on Route 1. I don't know how the 116 got ahead of it, but the Secretary said that they're a data-driven approach. Well, if you look at the data that was presented to the Five Points Working Group, I think it was incomplete and a little misleading. 16 is the single most intersection with 76 crashes. Cave Neck Road has 71, so just five behind it. It's also right behind it in the CTP with the way they rank projects. At 16, you only had 12 angle collisions, and those are typically the ones that we're concerned about as engineers with personal injuries. And in the last 3 years, you only had, I believe it was 0.3 to 0.5 personal injury crashes in a three-year period, and at least one of those was a DUI, and there were no significant injuries at any of those intersections. If you go to Cave Neck Road, you have 19 angle collisions, so five less total collisions, but actually seven more angle collisions. Then if you look at the intersections they gave us as a working group in that spreadsheet, if you remember Councilman Burton, intersections 10 through 15, there were 203 crashes versus 76. Of those 203, 85 were angle collisions. So it's actually more angle collisions at those intersections than all the crashes combined at 16. And when we look at crashes and what they cost to society, there's a report, NCHRP report 193, and at three-leg intersections, crashes cost about $214,000 each. The personal injuries are $207,000, almost $208,000.
At four-leg, we need you to clean up, three minutes is up, so just close up, you could.
Okay, that's fine. And in closing, basically also at four-leg intersections, $191,000 plus for injury collisions, where PD crashes only cost $6,000. So if we're evaluating these on the actual data suggests 16 should go last out of three projects. Thank you.
Mr. Lawson.
All right, Mr. President, thank you. Quite an array of information to provide council today. We will start with the easy stuff, a proclamation. I have a proclamation from council for the Community Action Month. I will read that proclamation and then we will make the presentation. Proclamation proclaiming the month of May as Community Action Month. Whereas Community Action has made essential contributions to individuals and families across this nation by creating economic opportunities and strengthening communities, and Community Action is a robust state and local force connecting people to life-changing services and creating pathways to prosperity in 99% of all American counties. Community Action builds and promotes economic stability as an essential aspect of enabling and enhancing stronger communities and stable homes. Community Action promotes community-wide solutions to challenges throughout our cities, suburbs, and rural areas, delivering innovative services and support that create greater opportunities for families and children to succeed. Community Action is celebrating 55 years of innovation, impact, and providing proven results for Americans. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Sussex County Council hereby proclaims the month of May 2019 as Community Action Month in Sussex County in recognition of the hard work and dedication of First State Community Action Agency. Signed, Michael H. Benson, Council President. Congratulations. I believe we have some representatives here. Mr. President, Bernice would like to come down. We'll make the presentation.
Good morning.
Good morning. I was to bring my board member with me.
Sure, certainly.
This is Mr. Brad Wheeler.
Thank you for all you guys do. Here's your proclamation and ready to take it. Good? Okay. Good?
Are you here?
Okay. Why don't you, here, I'm taking this in the folder for you. You can have the microphone. How about that?
Again, good morning. Glad to be here this morning. Representative Wilson, I'm glad to be here this morning.
Morning, Bernice.
Good morning.
Glad to see you.
As always, you know, I'm really moved by the generosity of the Sussex County Council. is our hometown, and we've been here of the 55 years Community Action been in existence. First State has been in Sussex County for 54 years. Last year, we served over 4,000 families, helping them to become self-sufficient. And I would just like to say to the council, thank you for all your support that you have given us over the years. Has it been easy? No, it has not. But the goal will continue to be that we work with families and communities to become self-sufficient. By that, we are providing them with the tools they need for a hand up and not a handout. So again, thank you for all that you do and have done, and hopefully will continue to do as we serve the people of Sussex County. And as you know, we serve in constituents in your jurisdiction. So thank you again for all that you have done and continue to do to help us make a better life for the individuals that we serve. Thank
certainly,
you.
Certainly, thank you. Any comments from council? Thank you very much, Bernice.
All right. Thank you, Bernice, for being here. Moving down the agenda, Mr. President, the next two items are the fiscal year 2020 budget presentation and a discussion and possible introduction of the proposed ordinance related to the same. As in years past, Ms. Jennings and myself will make a presentation related to the budget proposal. We'll start up here and move down and make our PowerPoint presentation and go over the information with council and introduce this year's budget to the public. So I'll begin by reading, paraphrasing today's budget letter. Mr. President, members of council, as required by Title IX, Chapter 70 of Delaware Code, I respectfully submit the proposed annual operating budget for Sussex County for fiscal year 2020. FY 2020 proposed budget was developed by a budget team consisting of the county administrator, the finance director, and the deputy finance director. This recommended budget was drafted after receiving individual requests from county departments and meeting with the respective directors to discuss their needs. We greatly appreciate the efforts of the directors and their staff for in assisting us in producing this budget. The FY 20 overall budget is $186 million, with 44% being in the general fund. The budget forecast shows a positive but slowing growth in the real estate market. Fiscal year 19 revenues from the housing sector are expected to be 5% over FY 18. The county's largest revenue source, realty transfer tax, may be equal or only slightly above FY 18. This nominal increase is something we have not seen in the last 5 years. Relying on RTT collection for operations does present a risk due to the volatile nature of this funding. Based on these trends, the budget being presented keeps RTT at the same level as the previous year. RTT funding is used primarily for public safety. These expenses include fire and ambulance services, supplemental contracted state police troopers, local law enforcement grants, and operations of the emergency medical and emergency preparedness departments. Although a demand for the county services continues to increase, we continue to take a conservative approach to the expansion of the county government. To ensure sustainability, the county's budget follows these financial-related goals. Prepare a balanced budget with minimum increases. Maintain an operating reserve of at least 25%. Continue to fund above the actuarial determined level of funding for pensions. Operate without tax-supported debt. Continue financial practices that maintain an AA strong bond rating. Use technology to streamline and automate business practices to help keep up with the demand for services. Continue the pay-as-you-go philosophy for capital project funds. Sussex County's economy continues to remain strong, and I remain optimistic about the county's future. The county will continue to live by a responsible financial philosophy while monitoring the local market trends. The prior strong years in the economy have allowed the county to respond to the calls for additional services while focusing on the areas of greatest need. This philosophy governs the decisions in developing this year's budget and provides guidance throughout the year as we fulfill our fiduciary duty to the citizens of this great county. Okay, Mr. President, we're going to move down to the dais now and begin our PowerPoint presentation.
Thank you.
Is that right? There we go. All right, our dry run this morning lasted more than an hour, so we're going to try to speed it up and go through as fast as we can, but if there are any questions, feel free to interrupt by all means. I'll begin and then turn it over to Ms. Jennings throughout the presentation. What you're about to see comes from approximately 5 to 6 months worth of work from the County Finance Department led by Ms. Jennings and Ms. Roth. What we do, as you're aware, receive requests from county department heads through guidance from our staff and take those requests and funnel it down into this recommended budget today. Along the way, receiving guidance from council to which we put in this product, the presentation, as well as the budget that you have, the fulfilled budget that you have in front of you. Represents quite a lot of work and something we should be very proud of because the document itself and the information behind it are outstanding. This is the county's mission statement. This drives our direction in everything that we do. It will also be highlighted throughout today's budget presentation. Committed to provide services that promote public safety, well-being, prosperity, and an enriched quality of life in a personal, professional, fiscally responsible manner for those who live, work, and vacation in Sussex County. At the time of the budget, it's a good opportunity for us to go and see the successes of the previous year. The reason it's the right time to do this is because we asked the department heads to submit their goals and deliverables for the previous year and the year looking out. We collect that information and provide that to you and the public for you to see exactly what the organization does in a year-to-year basis. And when you see it in this form, it is quite impressive. To know what the organization is doing within the means that we are provided. I'm not going to read all these bullet points. This presentation is available to the public to review and is in front of you. I will highlight some of the more impressive bullets that we want to make sure you're aware of. This year, completed the emergency police dispatching training and became certified in our emergency fire, medical, and police dispatching in the county's 911 center. We responded to 26,743 paramedic calls for service. That's a 50% increase in the last 10 years. If you follow along on the slide at the top, the underlined portion of the sentence there, the underlined portion is pulled directly from our mission statement, which highlights the direction that we are operating under. In this slide, several information that's provided here, but looking at the ones that are quite impressive, assisted over 240 households with housing repairs in our community development department. That's up 5% from last year. Approved 3 applications totaling over $2 million through the new Excite Sussex Loan Program. And as you're very familiar with, partnered with the Department of Correction and DLDOT for the removal of roadside trash throughout Sussex County. Next slide, operating in our personal and professional manner. Success stories here. We went live with our new CAMA system. That was an investment this council made years ago that we're finally seeing come to fruition. That also allowed all of our property records to be read online through the CAMA software. We completed the installation of modems in 40 county vehicles to allow direct connectivity to our resources out in the field. That is one manner for us to improve our efficiency. It held over 2,000 programs in the county's libraries where over 48,000 people attended. Successes in a fiscally responsible manner. Something very important, added over $90 million to our assessment roll. That's a 2.6% increase, which you will see in greater detail throughout this presentation. Submitted a grant and loan applications through Mr. Medlar's department, whom you see quite frequently on a Tuesday. For these applications, Winding Creek Water, Ellendale Water, Inland Bay Spray Loop, Joy Beach, Mallard Creek, and our Western Sewer Project, which is underway. This is a table that we put together that shows a 5-year barometer looking at our activity levels. And this is really indicative of all the work that's taking place here in the county and shows you in different categories where we are busy and we're seeing an uptick in or an increase in those various departments. On the left-hand side is the activity describer. In the first number column, that's FY14, that's looking back the 5 years. Next column over is the prior year, so that's a one-year look back, and then this current year is the last column. The percentage increase is the difference between FY14 and current, so that's showing you the five-year increase. I would draw your attention to some of the larger increases that we're seeing in this five-year snapshot. Specifically, the number of operations recorded at our county airport, 78% increase. The constable complaints tracks, 110% increase. New units addressed, that's units addressed in our mapping and addressing department, 186% increase. Public works revenue, that's revenue directly related to sewer and road inspections for the county projects, 170% increase. Sewer and road inspections up 67%. So that is a snapshot of the work that's taking place in the county today and looking back a few years and the deliverables that we were able to provide over FY19. Moving into FY20, here is the summary of today's recommended budget presentation broken down by funds. So general fund, over $81 million. Capital projects, general fund, $21 million. Water and sewer fund, $40 million. Capital projects for the water and sewer fund, $34 million. And our pension, $7 million, for a grand total of over $185 million, which we will go into detail now. Here are the highlights. General fund increase, $6.8 million. $5 million increase in transfers, $10 million to capital, and $5 million to pension. $781,000 for the paramedic department, $400,000 for our IT department, $287,000 for community development, and $201,000 for our emergency preparedness. Those are some of the larger increases that we wanted to highlight in the overall general fund $6.8 million increase. $19 million in reserves, or in other words, $19 million in savings that have been put aside in previous years, are being used for one-time expenses. Our government capital plan is without general fund debt, $21.4 million. No change in county property tax rates, but we will see some fee increases that we're recommending. Change in registered wills fee, an increase in our private road review and inspection fees. New sewer assessment rates for Dewey and Henlopen Acre sewer areas directly related to the Rehoboth Outfall project coming to fruition. And our final phase in increase for septage hauler rates. All of these fee increases we will go over in detail. No surprise here, our budget focus, which remains this council's focus for our services that we provide visitors and residents of Sussex County, three categories. Public safety, wastewater, and economic development. This is what this budget is all about. And you will see where we are spending the funding to provide those services. Public safety is always our driver. 35.8% of our general fund budget is related to public safety, broken down in these categories. $17 million for our paramedic services. $4.4 million for our local fire and ambulance services, our partnership that we provide with our local fire companies and ambulance companies. $3.8 million for emergency preparedness and 911. $3.3 for our Delaware State Police contract, providing troopers here in Sussex County. And $675,000 for our local law enforcement grants related to the funding the council provides to our local towns that provide local law enforcement. Wastewater, another driver. This is our wastewater sewer capital budget of $34.6 million, $14.3 for our inland base facility, $9.4 for our unified sewer district expansions, that's new sewer expansions, $6.8 for our South Coastal facility, and $2 million for the partnership with Rehoboth Beach at their wastewater treatment plant. Economic development is a third driver. $12.7 million at the airport and business park, $2 million for broadband expanding coverage for our fiber initiative, and $166,000 for our economic development initiatives. To go over more detail of the general fund, I'm going to invite our finance director, Ms. Jennings, to come forward. Thank you, Ms. Jennings.
Good morning, Mr. President, members of council. So we are going to go in the detail of the general fund budget. So as we do in previous years, we show a breakdown of the tax dollars. So what this graphic does, it takes all of our expenditures and it backs out additional revenue that we get for grants or building permit fees, things like that. So that just leaves the tax dollar. That's both property tax and really transfer tax. When all we have left is tax dollars, where are they being spent? And you can see 58 cents on the dollars being spent in public safety. The next one's libraries at 14 cents and general government is 13 cents. And what's important to note here is those three categories are exactly the same as previous years. Okay, some general fund highlights. As Mr. Lawson has mentioned, there is no tax increase. We are using savings to be spent on one-time expenditures. The average county tax bill for a single-family home in Sussex County is $114. So when you do get your county tax bill, it's around $1,000, and 10% of that, which is $100, is the county tax portion. The rest of it goes to the schools. Revenue, we are seeing revenue increase. So excluding transfers, we're seeing a 4.4% increase in revenues. That's $2.6 million. So where is that coming from? So 2.6% is from taxable assessments. So those are increases or improvements on land. That produces a $400,000 increase in revenue. But where's the rest of it come from if that's just the tax revenue? We are still seeing an increase in building-related revenues of $1.3 million. So what I did here is that you'll see the table of our building-related revenues, building inspection fees, fire service fees, that's the fee on the building permits, recorder of deeds, really transfer tax, private road fees, and building permit fees. So 2019 budget was $31.8 million. In the 2020 budget, we're proposing $33 million. That's a $1.3 million increase in building-related revenue. That's between 4 and 5%. What is important to note here is realty transfer tax. We are keeping it flat with 2019 budget. One of my goals this year with presenting this budget was to show that we can continue to operate without relying on realty transfer tax and that increase that we're seeing there. So let's look at the trends that we're seeing with this building-related revenue, and it's very important that we keep an eye on this revenue because it is economically driven. So you can see the trend here. Look at 2015 to 2016. There was a 23% increase just in that 1 year. 2016 and 17 was an 8%, and then 17 to 18 was a 9%. But looking at, as we're closing out 2019, we're seeing a slight flattening here. It's a 5%, still an increase, but it's definitely not where we saw it 2015 and 16 with a 23% increase. But we always budget conservatively, so what we do is in 2020's budget, we only budget 85% of what we anticipate to bring in 2019, and that's very important because if you just go back a few years, you can see that we did not even reach what we are budgeting in 2020. Let's look at all of the revenues that support expenditures. And you will see that realty transfer tax is still the largest portion of revenue that's supporting our budget. But if you look at the little chart in the corner, fiscal year 19, that percentage was higher in 19 compared to 2020. And that's because we're keeping realty transfer tax at a stable level so that we can see we don't have to, we're going to try not to rely on it as much as we move forward. The other financing sources, this is where we're spending our savings to support one-time expenditures. And again, a lot of this has to do with transfers, and we have a slide on that coming up. Property taxes, looking at $17 million there. Charges for services will be our building permits and any other fees that we charge for services, and that's $14 million. Intergovernmental revenue are grants that we receive from the federal and state. That's $7 million, and over half of that is the state of Delaware paramedic grant to support our paramedic department. All right, let's take a little bit look at realty transfer tax since that is our largest revenue source and looking at the trends year over year. So 2006 was the peak of the realty transfer tax at 35.3. And then you can see where we're going to anticipate collecting 32.5. So that is the second highest year that we have seen since 2006. But what you should notice is 18 and 19 is relatively flat. We're no longer seeing that those large increases again. In 2020, by budgeting the same as we did in 2019, that is a 70% cut, well, 70% of what we anticipate in 2019. What do we spend our realty transfer tax on? So what I did here on the chart is you can see 22.5 is what is in the budget, and then I back out all of the expenditures of how we spend that 22.5 million. So let's just talk about the paramedic department. So our paramedic department is about $17 million, but we do get over $4 million from the state of Delaware to support them. So I back out that grant to show that what is the total cost of the paramedic department that's being supported by realty transfer tax. So, and I do that for every of these expenditures, if there's any revenue, other revenue that supports that, to show where that money is being spent. So you can see in the pie chart that almost 100% of our budgeted realty transfer tax pays for public safety. We do have additional eligible expenses that we could increase the reliability of realty transfer tax, but we're not. We're using other revenue sources to support these other items here. Drainage, we have some grants that we give the towns if they don't meet certain things in realty transfer tax, or downtown development grants. So you can see those are also eligible expenditures. Okay, let's talk about what we're spending savings on. We only are spending savings on a few items, and those items have to do with either items that were budgeted in previous years and we're not getting into it this year, or they're items that are going to help us with our future. So while we have the money, that's planned for the future. So let's look at the first one, the capital projects interfund transfer. That $10 million is being transferred to our capital projects fund. That's a five-year plan that we have. We have some projects in there that are looking on the 20-year horizon and for public safety, and we're going to get into that. So it's important that we move some money over there, because right now we have no general fund debt, and by doing this, this will continue with that philosophy of not having any kind of debt in the future. We have an additional pension contribution of $5 million. So we do have a small, we're about 93% funded in the pension fund, but we do have an unfunded liability. So this, again, will also help with our future if the economy is not doing well, that we will not have to make those big contributions when we're in the future if the economy does turn down. And then these other items that you see, sports complex loan, economic development loan, the carryover, these are everything that council has approved in the past that I have to rebudget again this year, because this is when the expenses will probably take place. So we'll be using those funds in this year. And then we have added additional money into open space, and we'll get into that with the grant and aid budget. Okay, let's get into some of the fee increases. So Ms. Cindy Green of the Register of Wills office is proposing a couple fee increases. So if you remember last year, the state of Delaware did made some legislation to change that we can now accept wills in our Register of Wills office for depositing for safekeeping. So when that happened, in state law, it says that the fee would be $5, but county council can change that fee. So Ms. Cindy Green is proposing to change that fee to $10 to offset those storage costs. This would be the same fee that Newcastle County charges as well. Kent County at this time does not take wills. Also, to increase the fee from $1 to $2 just to have somebody come in and look at that will is what that does, and then a $5 fee for taking that will and making some type of amendment to that will. Okay. The second type of fee that Ms. Cindy Green is looking at is a web search subscription service. So we have digitized older wills, and what this would allow mostly title searchers to do is from their home, they can look at those wills online instead of coming into the office. So this fee would be $25 per user per month, or a law firm has the opportunity to do a subscription for their entire firm, $150 per month. This would be for unlimited users in their firm. This is half of what we do charge in the Recorder of Deeds office. Okay, the next fee is the Public Works Division. If you remember, in 2017, Council made revisions to Chapter 99 of the code as it related to drainage and grading of private roads. So these increases just help offset those costs of additional inspections that our office is doing. That we're not hiring new staff or anything, but there is some overtime in there that we would like to cover those costs. So the two fees would be the increase from $42 to $45 per lot to cover the plan review and processing of bulk and detailed grading plans. And then the inspection fee increased that 1%. So right now we charge 7%. The proposal would be 8% for verification of documentation and compliance with bulk grading and detailed grading designs. Okay, now we're done with the revenue. We'll move on to the expense side. So you can see where most of our expenses are today and what departments. Again, public safety, always a key, and you'll see those are the largest expenditures. So we have paramedics is 21% of our expenditures, combined with emergency preparedness, that's 26%, which doesn't include the public safety that's in grant and aid. When you do that, then you got 36% of this pie is related to public safety. And you can see other financing uses, that's $19 million. Again, these are the transfers that we're going to be making, $10 million into the capital fund, $5 million into the pension fund. General government is 18%. That's just everything that is being supportive of the rest of the pie, IT, HR, admin, finance, facilities management. And then grant and aid, $19 million, but we're going to go into that in more detail. All right, this just takes the numbers from the previous slide and just cuts it up in a different type of pie. So this is the expenditure. So if you take all those departments and you pull out all the salaries and benefits, then you have this new chart. So salaries and benefits are 44% of our expenditures. So it's very important for us to keep an eye on that cost because it's a huge cost driver for any county, any government that's service-based. So when we look at personnel, we are recommending an increase in positions, and you can see that on the right in that table. We started with 515 in 2019, and we're proposing an ending balance of 523. What is important here, as you look at those lists, 75% of those positions are sewer related. So that means they're being paid by sewer fees and not tax dollars. With this, we're proposing a 2% COLA, which is in line with inflation, merits based on performance, the holidays are the same in any year that there's no election year, health insurance costs are consistent, we're not seeing much of an increase there, pension, we're required, our required contribution is 28% of gross salaries, again, we have the additional 5% contribution, and any new employees are required to contribute 3% of their salaries. So it's very important for us to justify any increases in employees because of those costs. So looking at overtime, so 2009 was our highest number of employees. And if you look at 2020, you can see we're down 26 positions. That's 4.7%. If you look at the bottom at 492 and you go to 523, you can see now that we're up 31 positions or 6.3%. But how does that compare to our activity? And you'll notice that our activity is growing at a way higher percentage than the percentage of our employees. So we have planning and zoning revenue and permits are issued, they're up 35%. Library visits up 26%. EMS response is up 28%. Our population growth in the county is up 16%. Taxable assessments, again, improvements on properties are up 17%. 911 calls at our dispatch center, up 8%. Building inspections are up 42%. And water and sewer EDUs, which is our biggest driver of our employees, is up 67%. So you can see all those orange lines are much higher than what we are increasing in employees. And you're probably wondering, well, how can we make this work? And that is because of all the investments that council has made in technology that we're able to run more efficient today than we were back in 2014, so that we didn't have to grow as quickly as the demand is requiring. All right, moving on to the public safety portion, our county-owned public safety. The EOC budget, you can see, is increasing $200,000, and that's for new consoles. We do have a new dispatcher in there. But remember, there's been an 18% growth in calls over the last 5 years, so this increase makes sense. It's in line. Responses in the paramedic department has also been seeing an increase. It's a 28% increase. And you can see we're increasing $700,000 as well to keep up. A lot of this is new equipment replacing old vehicles, and we also have some new equipment on all of our vehicles. Moving on to the capital sides, we have the operations up top, the capital on the bottom. You can see we're also proposing some capital items that Mr. Lawson's going to talk about in the capital budget. We continue to want to own our stations versus leasing. We're here long term. So the EMS constructions of the $1.2 million, that's a combination of Seaford, building a paramedic station there, and looking for some land in the Dagsboro area. The public safety building design is out at the EOC, and again, we'll go into more detail in a little bit. Okay, again, talking about grant and aid, remember that this was 19% of all of our expenditures. So grants are pretty much almost equal to what we collect in taxes. There's $16 million in total. And you can see public safety is 53% of that. We'll have another slide to go in the detail there. Open space, we're adding additional money there. We're going to talk about that. Libraries, there's a proposed increase in those. So those parts of the pipe, got more charts on those. Economic development, the 14%. We have that Excite Sussex loan. We have the Downtown Development District loan that are all in there, the grant in there. The community assistant, there is a senior grant. The Cheer Center here in Georgetown, there is a commitment in that number there. The agriculture and drainage, this is going to the Sussex Conservation District and the tax ditch programs. So let's go to the biggest part of that grant chart, so the public safety. So there is an $889,000 increase, and that's broken out in multiple areas. So the Delaware State Police contract in this budget is $3.3 million. That is a 5% increase for 22 supplemental troopers in Sussex County. The local law enforcement, we are seeing an increase of $100,000. The recommendation is to give each local law enforcement agency $30,000 a year compared to the $25,000 that they had been receiving. Fire BLS is also seeing an increase. This is due to the building permit fees that are being collected. You can see the chart down below, and you can see it's made up. Fire companies receive multiple types of funding, fire enhancement, equipment related. We have an interest grant. And you can see it increases time and time again, and most of this has to do with building permit. We have given them $500,000 last year that we're continuing again this year. So as we see this, we do get some requests for additional funding. So I have called the other counties, and I wanted to see how we compare to the other counties as we're preparing this 2020 budget when it comes to fire service. And you can see that, so like Newcastle has their grant that they give. They have a building permit fee just like us. They have an impact fee. Kent County, they have a grant, they have the building permit fee. And you can see how we compare. So you can see Sussex County per capita, so per resident, we give the fire companies $19.09 out of the budget per capita. Newcastle County, which would be the second highest, is $11.16 per resident. So we are almost double than what the second highest county is in Sussex County. So we are very supportive of our public safety, or our fire and ambulance companies. Okay, moving on to the library's grant. So if as you're aware of our structure, we do have a library board. So the 11 independent libraries met with the library board. They recommended, the independents recommended an increase. They haven't seen much of an increase. They're growing, their demand's growing. So then the independent library board came to the budget committee. They supported that increase. So the increase is $220,000. So the budget committee is recommending that same increase from the library board. The $220,000 increase over the 11 libraries would be $20,000 each. And as you can see, that would be a total budget of $2.5 million for those 11 libraries. And what you can see here on this chart is that all of the services that our independent libraries they do in our county, and without this money, some of those services might not continue. All right, our last item for the grant aid is the land preservation open space funding. There is a recommendation to put additional $1 million in this funding, and you can see since 2003, the amount of money that we put aside, how much is spent, the acres that have been acquired, and then how much money we have remaining in reserve. So you can see we spent most of the money. So we had $717,000 at the end of 2019. Our recommendation is to put $1 million to that. So you can see we would like to continue that program. And this program could be one of two things. We could be partnering with the Sussex County Land Trust, or we could be participating in the state's farmland preservation. Okay, I'd like to turn it back over to Mr. Lawson for the capital projects.
Okay, almost there. The next slides are going to go into detail related to capital projects. You're going to see some pretty significant numbers in our capital projects forecast, but that's for this reason. Part of our budget this year is focused on planning for the future and the needs to provide the county the services that we provide today in the future. So in both our general fund and our enterprise fund, sewer and water, you are going to see that come to fruition by means of our capital projects. So this is a general fund breakdown for capital projects for our five-year projected spend. And draw your attention to the first financial column, which is our fiscal year 2020 budget. And within those items are the highlights that make up the $21 million in this year's capital budget forecast. What we have planned on to plan for the future as it relates to the county admin here in Georgetown is the acquisition of property and the construction of a new annex building for the county. And we've started steps to move forward in that, and you can see that it's represented in the capital projects funding portion of FY 2020. We are maxed out in this building, and we need more space if we're going to stay on the circle, which is it is a desire of county council to stay on the circle. So to plan for that, we are starting in this budget with land acquisition, and then in future budgets, design money, and then eventually construction funds. Moving down the line, you'll see funding for the airport, $4.1 million for runway 1028 taxiway. That project's actually started this year's budget and will come to fruition in next year's budget. If you drive into the airport today, you'll see that underway. Business park improvements, $3.4 million. This will get the business park, this is the new business park, shovel ready. That will mean the Baltimore Avenue Road will meet final connection with Old Baltimore and New Baltimore, creating a new entrance point to our business park. It will put the internal road spur to the rest of the real estate out there to access those lease areas, which will allow us to have all infrastructure in place so we have a truly shovel-ready business park ready to be leased. Further down, you'll see the public safety building, $1 million. More future planning. We're going to move the paramedics out of the West Complex and move them into a new building that will be built next to and be part of the existing 911 center. Their current location out to the West Complex is not conducive for a number of reasons. That's a very old building and it is aging and requires a lot of funding to maintain. And more importantly, putting the paramedics next to the 911 center where our other public safety entity, our dispatchers are located, will allow all of our public safety departments to operate under one roof, which will really increase our efficiency. We mentioned the public or the EMS stations there at the bottom. We will construct the Seaford station this year, and we hope to continue our construction of new stations in other areas related to our services, particularly in the Dagsboro area. Okay, water and sewer capital projects. The numbers here that you will see are quite significant, and the reason being is because we are planning for a 20-year forecasted level of service for our sewer and water customers. Mr. Wilson, all of this will be paid for by the users, so no fear there, but we do need to plan for the future in both our facilities as well as our collection and disposal for wastewater. A couple highlights here. There is a new assessment rate for Henlopen Acres and Dewey Beach, a $296 per EDU will be the new assessed rate for those two areas, but that's in direct correlation with the Rehoboth Beach outfall project and the project coming to fruition and our portion of the debt of that project. No increases in our sewer and water charges or connection fees, but there will be a sewer operation budget increase of $2.2 million with some details there. In total, capital budget of $34.6 million with a $218 million five-year plan. This year we'll see the last year of our increase in our septage charges. Recall over the past few years we've laddered up our septage charge for receiving septage at our facilities. Right now we receive septage at both South Coastal and Inland Bays. We're going to phase out South Coastal and have all septage move to Inland Bays. This is known by all the local septage carriers, and that rate will be 0.076 per gallon. That's all based on a data-driven analysis whereby being able to pay for the treatment and disposal of septage at that plant. Here's some highlights of our sewer expenses. It costs a lot of money to be the largest sewer provider in Sussex County with over 77,000 customers, and this is what it takes to maintain that system. People don't care where it goes after it flushes. They just want to make sure it gets processed and they don't see it again. So this is what it takes. Our maintenance equipment and vehicles, collection systems, and then our time and material projects with our time and material vendor to be able to maintain the system. This is what we predict that we will need for this year and the projects that we will be able to accomplish in the next budget year. Okay, here's the big numbers, capital projects. Again, forecasting for 20 years to increase our disposal and treatment of sewer at our four plants. This will see a $34.5 million capital project spend in FY 2020, that first column. But what we're getting for that is increased expansion at our plants. So at Inland Bays, we're going to see those top rows, $8 million, $2 million, $3 million. But for that, we're getting a 2 million gallon per day treatment at today's rates, expand it to $5 million. At South Coastal, we're spending $6 million for capacity and compliance upgrades. That will bring us from 6 million gallons per day to 10 million gallons. That's what we need for our 20-year forecast. That forecast, based on our consultant work, as well as Mr. Medlar's, and what our current rate of bringing on new customers we're seeing in the last few years. I want to draw your attention to the Herring Creek Sewer Project, $3 million. That's a project that will come online this year and begin one of our more significant projects, both in a capital spend, but in an environmental impact to our inland bays. Let me focus on that here on this slide. Mr. Medlars would quote by saying, "We are the driving force for the remediation and the health of the inland bays." And it's directly related to our sewer projects in the Inland Bays watershed. These projects all are current or future projects in this year's budget or beyond that will impact the water quality of the Inland Bays. The second project you see that I referenced before, Herring Creek, $22 million, that's coming online this year, 713 EDUs. That project is the equivalent of the city of Rehoboth getting their outfall pipe out of the Rehoboth and Lewis Canal as it relates to the environmental impact of the water quality of the Rehoboth Bay. So not only are we bringing on new customers and increasing our capacity and planning for 20-year future, we are seeing the impacts to the inland bays related to the septic removal when we bring these customers online. Each one of those EDUs, if it's a residential EDU, represents one septic system that is coming offline and going on to a county system where it's treated and disposed of properly. So a real driving force in the health of the inland bays related to the environment. Okay. Thank you for your focus and patience. That concludes our presentation. I'll invite Ms. Jennings up here for any questions you may have. Our budget hearing is scheduled for June 18th here at the council chambers. Any member of the public or stakeholder that chooses to offer comments can do so by accessing the presentation on our website or emailing the county at budget@sussexde.gov. Thank you, Mr. President, members of council, for your attention.
Thank you. Ms. Jennings, as you come up, I would be remiss if I did not certainly recognize and thank you, Mrs. Roth and Mr. Lawson, and other people, but the three of you particularly, for all your hard work on putting this budget together. I'm sure the public has no idea what it involves to put a budget this size together and how hard you three work on this for months. So certainly, thank you. Congratulations. It's a great budget. And we're excited.
Thank you.
You have any more questions to council? Questions to council? Questions to council?
We're spending $5.5 million for airport, right? And I think I saw it in the budget. With no route, no access for getting the route in there. We're still the same old condition we were 10 years, better than 15 years ago. Still haven't got any route to get back into this. We're working on EOC, yet we're not doing anything, not making any improvement on it.
That's a great question for our next presenters who are anxiously awaiting to give you an update on DelDOT roads and the CTP projects, and I know Park Avenue is part of their update. So if you hold tight for 1 minute, we will have our DelDOT friends come up and give you an update.
Well, I hope they can give me the answer.
Okay.
I just made the budget, so I guess I can blame it on Gina part of it.
You can blame it on me. That's fine.
Todd's fault.
That's fine.
You've got to give them money, Todd.
Sure.
Are you going to read a short title?
I do. I have two ordinances that need to be introduced. An ordinance establishing the annual operating budget for fiscal year 2020. That's the first one.
I'll introduce it.
Okay. And then an ordinance establishing the annual service charges, annual assessment rates for collection and transmission and or treatment and connection charges for all Sussex County water and sanitary sewer districts.
I'll introduce it.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you all very much.
Thank you, sir.
Now, Mr. Lawson.
Yes, I know the next item of business is an update from DelDOT. Our friends from DelDOT are here to provide us an update.